is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. We've had their partnership manager and training specialist, Jefferson Mason, and marketing manager, Nick Bartlett, on the show in the past, and we couldn't be more excited about what they're doing for the game of basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Beyond efficient reps, Dr. Dish provides training expertise and versatility designed to develop complete players. The new Dr. Dish CT machine has further revolutionized basketball training with over 150-plus on-demand individual and team workouts from some of the best coaches and trainers in the game. These workouts include video instruction and combine game-like shooting drills with ball handling, conditioning, and agility drills. Along with workouts, the Dr. Dish training management system also provides stat tracking and analytics to track progress and ensure accountability. These are just a few reasons why top programs like Duke, North Carolina, Louisville, Florida, Baylor, and countless others are upgrading to Dr. Dish. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com. Follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And make sure you mention the Hoopheads podcast to get $300 off your next Dr. Dish purchase. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get out and get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
I worked out for the Charlotte Bobcats at the time, right? The Charlotte Bobcats had the number 38 pick in the draft, and I was from Greensboro. I played in Greensboro, so there's an obvious connection there. They had the 38 pick, so I don't remember if it was David Stern or I can't remember who the commissioner was at the time. I don't think it was. It might have been David Stern. So David Stern gets up to the podium, and he says, with the 38th pick, the Charlotte Bobcats select Kyle. And the Kyle was the longest drawn-out Kyle I thought of my life. And I thought, like, I thought it was going to be me, but literally my heart dropped. And it was like, with the 38th pick, the Charlotte Bobcats draft Kyle Weaver. And my heart just stopped. I was like, oh, man.
Kyle Hines has written the blueprint on how to have a successful international basketball career. He is a three-time EuroLeague champion and a four-time VTB United League champion. His individual accomplishments include being one of only four players in EuroLeague history to have reached six consecutive EuroLeague Final Fours. Kyle was also named the 2016 EuroLeague Best Defender and the 2016 VTB United League Defensive Player of the Year. Hailing from Sicklerville, New Jersey, Kyle attended UNC Greensboro, where he became one of only six NCAA players to record 2,000 points, 1,000 rebounds, and 300 blocks in a collegiate career. He is currently in his seventh season with CSKA Moscow. In addition to his career on the court, Kyle has chronicled his basketball journey for Uninterrupted, The Frugal Athlete, and on his own podcast, The Kyle Zone. His work in the community includes organizations like One Team Social Responsibility, Slums Dunk, and the Team Hines Basketball Scholarship Program. Make sure you subscribe to the Hoopheads podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, please leave us a 5-star rating and review. Believe it or not, those ratings help your friends and colleagues find the show. If you really love what you're hearing, recommend the Hoopheads pod to someone and get them to join you as a part of Hoopheads Nation. Listen to this episode and enjoy the basketball journey of European pro Kyle Hines. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here without my co-host Jason Sunkel this morning, but I am pleased to welcome to the podcast Kyle Hines, European professional basketball player. Kyle, welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be on here with you. Really looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Excited to get you on, learn more about some of the great things that you're doing both inside and outside the game of basketball. Let's start out by going back in time to when you were a kid. And talk to me a little bit about how you got into the game of basketball when you were younger.
So basically, I come from an athletic family. My dad, he did everything. He played basketball, football, track. He tried out with some NFL teams, the Cowboys and the Giants and the Dolphins. So even my uncle played Division I basketball and all my cousins. So it was almost kind of I guess you could say, in my DNA a little bit. So. I just kind of naturally did everything. I started out with karate, then I did track and field, then I did football, then I did baseball and basketball, which was kind of funny. It was probably my worst sport. I kind of have like the Michael Jordan, I guess, story that I was on my eighth grade team. I tried out for the eighth grade team in middle school, and I got cut from the team. And because I got cut from the team, it made me so upset that I was like, you know what? I'm going to drop everything and I'm going to play basketball. And from that moment on, it was like basketball became like almost my priority. And I just started playing basketball. I started, you know, like really training hard and really working hard at the game. And over the next, you know, 3-4 years, it basically became my passion. So it wasn't necessarily, like I said, in the beginning, it was just something I did for fun. It was something, you know, just to, you know, kind of be around with my friends. But it wasn't until I actually experienced that Michael Jordan cut story that I decided to start to play for real.
So talk to me a little bit about, I got two questions after what you just shared with us. One is, talk to me a little bit about how important it was for you to be a multi-sport athlete when you were younger and how you think that helped you into your professional career. And then after you answer that, just share with us, once you decided how that basketball was going to be your thing, talk to us a little bit about how you went about getting better. What were you doing with the game from eighth grade on that helped you to improve? Was it time in the gym? Was it pickup games? Was it the AAU circuit? Just talk to me a little bit about those two things.
I think first, number one, I mean, what my dad and my mom had decided for me was like, I want to do all these other sports. And at the age of 5, they were like, well, you can't do anything until you get your black belt in karate. And part of that was because it seems kind of crazy now, but part of that was that it helped me kind of develop coordination. Because I was coming up, I was kind of like an uncoordinated kid. Kind of funny enough, like my mom always said, like every time I ran past the coffee table, I would hit the coffee table for the first 4 years of my life. So they wanted to help me build coordination and discipline. So I think that by me going to karate helped kind of lay the foundation for my sports career, just because me building that discipline, me building that foundation, me building that, you know, all that, which, you know, helps you in karate. And then from there, like I said, I played all these different sports. It kind of just helped me just kind of be well-rounded. It kind of helped me just kind of have a well-rounded background as far as, like, you know, different multitude of sports and understanding, knowing how to use my body, understanding how to use angles and different things like that from a young age. And I think what I tell kids all the time, I'm like, you know, play all sports. You know, a lot of times now you see kids at like 5, 6 years old and like, oh, I'm only going to play basketball. I'm only going to play one thing. And I think, you know, kids should, from a young age, just play everything. Just enjoy the game. Enjoy having fun. Enjoy what sports is. And I think that's what kind of helped me from the beginning, and it helped me continue on, you know, for my professional career. And how basically I kind of took the approach where it's like I just got in the gym. I kind of became obsessed with basketball. So it was like almost from that moment, eighth grade on, every morning before I went to school, I would wake up at like 5 o'clock in the morning. I would first go like run with my dad. I would go run hills and run sprints and stuff on the track. And then I would just go to the weight room. And then even like on the school bus, before school bus come, I had a basketball in my hand and I was trying to do dribble moves. I'm from like the South Jersey, Philadelphia area. So Allen Iverson was really big at the time. So he was doing these crossovers and all this stuff. So I would literally sit in front of the bus stop to the bus game, and I'm constantly dribbling the ball, trying to crossover, trying to do all these moves. As soon as school was over, I would come back home and I would go on the playground. I would play in the playground. And then I was, you know, in my garage or in my basement dribbling with the tennis ball or taking the basketball and hitting the ball, hitting the center blocks with the ball, trying to work on my bounce passes and things of that. So I think that was kind of initially what helped me. And then also I went – my ninth grade year, I went to a perennial, I guess, powerhouse basketball school. And I told my parents I wanted to go to the school just because of the academics, but also because of basketball. And I went there, and that's where I basically learned the fundamentals. Like, literally, my coach for the first four or five months of the season, all we did, he was kind of old school. So we had the goggles, the safety goggles, and we had the
dribble goggles. Yeah, there you go.
And the dribble goggles. So I would literally do that every day. And then we would do like seriously only fundamental stuff, like catch the ball and do your jab series. Or he would take us near the wall, and we would literally, he would make a mark an X on the wall, and we would do the follow through where you just, you know, throw the ball at the X and continue to do that. So really for like almost like a year and a half, I had like a nonstop fundamental clinic of basketball, and I just continued to work and work, and I just got better over time.
I think that fundamental base for kids is key. And then I think also what you talked about in terms of multi-sport athletes, I think that, again, there's a trend going the opposite direction of, I think there's pressure from coaches and organizations and parents to specialize because everybody sees this pot of gold at the end of the rainbow that they're chasing instead of kind of focusing on the moment. I want to ask you about playground basketball and your experience growing up as you were in high school and into college. Just talk about the pickup basketball scene and what that meant to you in terms of your development.
That's where I learned the game. Again, like I can, you know, kind of give this, I guess, to my parents. I lived in South Jersey, which was considered the suburbs. My dad was from Philadelphia. So during the summertime, I think the summer between my 9th grade and 10th grade year, he took me over to Philadelphia, and I was literally playing in the heart of North Philadelphia, playing with guys like, you know, Kyle Lowry and, you know, all these guys in the middle of Philadelphia. And here I am, the suburban New Jersey kid, and I was almost like a fish out of water. And I played in literally like 13 or 14 leagues, like every outdoor league in Philadelphia I played in. And my dad said, like, if you want to play, these are the guys that you're going to learn how to play with. And it was because, you know, in Philadelphia, you know, it is in inner cities, like, you know, kids at the time, they didn't have PlayStations. They didn't have, you know, all this other stuff to kind of keep them in the house. Kids would literally go outside and they were just playing all the time. So kids were at the playground. They were literally playing all the time, all day. So I would go to Philly and I would play in literally like 4 or 5 different leagues throughout the week. And that's pretty much what helped my game progress. Like just playing pickup basketball, playing playground basketball, playing in summer leagues, playing in rec centers and in street ball games. And literally I became a better basketball player. It, number one, it gave me confidence. And then also number two, it allowed me to play in game situations, allowed me to kind of understand the game, playing in a game, which is like, is another thing that probably doesn't happen so often anymore. It's like, you know, you ride by playgrounds today and they're empty. You don't see many kids playing playground basketball or pickup basketball.
Yeah. I think the demise of pickup basketball, it's been another theme sort of our podcast, talking to guys who came up in an earlier era, and they all lament the fact that playground basketball just doesn't exist. And they talk about, I think the one thing that it always comes back to is the competitiveness that's required to be successful on the playground, where, you know, we have our AAU culture today where kids lose a game at 1 o'clock and they get done and they're like, where are we going to eat? When are we going to eat lunch? And because we got another game at 3 o'clock. And so each individual game doesn't matter. And so many coaches just say, you know, it just feels like kids in a lot of ways were more competitive back then because you had to be good in order to be picked up for the next game. If you weren't helping your team win, nobody wanted to sit for 3 or 4 games when you're at a playground where there's, you know, 25 guys sitting on the side waiting their turn to get in. If you can't play, you're not getting picked up. And I think that's a big piece of it, that competitiveness. And the other thing that I think you mentioned there that I think is key is that by you going in there and playing against guys who were older than you, who were bigger than you at the time, even if the players were, I always say, like if I was a 14 or 15, 16-year-old kid and I'm playing against adults, even if those adults aren't tremendous basketball players, they still are bigger, stronger, faster, pushing you around. And I think that that's one thing that kids today miss that I think really makes a big difference in terms of that playground basketball culture and how somebody who grew up on that culture, how they develop their game. And that's kind of what you were attesting to in that, what you just said.
Yeah. I mean, that's absolutely true. There's no age limits or age groups when you play playground basketball. They don't go around, you know, saying, okay, you're 10, 11, 12, you play on this court, or you're 13, 14, 15, you play on this court. It's like, once you get on, it's fair game. So, you know, in a playground basketball, you can be playing against, you know, grown men or grown women, or you could be playing against, you know, young kids or older kids. Like, everything's fair game. And once you play, you play. And like you said, like, you know, when you go to a competitive court or you go to a court where a lot of people are going to, you don't want to have to sit out 3-4 games. You don't want to sit out, sit out on the side if you don't play. And then a lot of times your reputation is built upon in your area or your community or your development or your neighborhood, how good you are in basketball. So You know, you don't want to be that guy that doesn't get picked, that's just there on the sideline with the fresh sneakers on and the dry shirt.
No doubt. Now your reputation's made on social media instead of on the blacktop.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And highlight videos.
Yeah, no question about that. It's a totally different world. Let's put it this way. I'm glad I'm almost 50. I'm glad I grew up in the era I did. The playground basketball scene is probably some of the best memories of my entire life. So I think I enjoyed that tremendously. And it's something that every time I look around, like you said, when you drive by a playground and it's empty, it makes me sad that kids today aren't getting that same opportunity. That's not to say there aren't good things about the system the way it is now, but there's definitely the disappearance of playground basketball is something that makes me sad every time I really dig into it. All right, let me ask you about your recruitment into college. When did you start thinking about playing college basketball, and then talk a little bit about your high school experience then leading into your recruitment and just how you ended up playing college basketball?
So real quick, in the beginning of the story, I said I went to a perennial powerhouse basketball school my freshman year, and I decided to transfer back home and went to the local public school. The local public school is a brand new school. There was literally, I was the first class that went. So another reason why I went there is because I knew that I would have an opportunity to play. There would be, you know, there was no senior class. There was no class ahead of us. So it was just mainly just sophomores and juniors. So I knew if I went there, I could play. So I just wanted to have the opportunity to play. So I didn't necessarily realize that I was a Division I player or could play college basketball probably until my first game. My junior year of high school, when I did something, I made a move and I had like two explosive dunks. And then the next day, a teacher came to me and he sat me down and I thought I was in trouble. And he was like, listen, he pulled me to his classroom and he was like, listen, I think you have a serious opportunity to, you know, to do something with basketball. You can, you know, use basketball as, you know, opportunity for you to go to college. Did you ever think about it? And I said, no, I'm just, you know, out here just playing basketball, just doing it for fun. So at that time, that's when I started seriously considering the fact that I could, play at a high level. And I still remember like it was yesterday, my first letter, which is kind of funny because I wasn't a 4.0 or 1600 SAT student in college, but my first letter was from Harvard University.
Nice.
Division I basketball there. Yeah. So I was like, oh man, I'm going to Harvard. I was like, I didn't know anything about the qualifications to go to Harvard or about Ivy League. I was like, man, I'm going to Harvard.
I got my letter. It's funny how that first letter sticks with you. There's no doubt about that.
I swear that I walked around school for almost 2 weeks with that letter hanging out of my back pocket and making
waiting
it
for
fall
people
out
to ask,
possible.
Hey, hey Kyle, exactly. What is that? What is that? What's that in your backpack?
Exactly. Oh, I'm like, oh, that's just my letter from Harvard. Don't worry about it.
That's awesome. So that's good stuff.
So basically what happened was, the next summer, my 11th grade year, I went to a five-star basketball camp, the famed five-star basketball camp. That was my first time leaving my area. I never played AAU basketball or anything like that before. And I went to five star, and I met the legendary Howard Garfinkel, the director of the five star basketball camp, who's famous for, you know, LeBron, Michael Jordan, and all those names. And I played, and he seen me play, and he was like, "Where are you from?" And I was like, kind of told him my story, and then he was like, "Oh," he was like, "Don't worry, I'm gonna take over all your recruiting." So I met the coach that I eventually committed. A guy named Fran McCaffrey, who's now the head coach of Iowa University. At the time, he was at UNC Greensboro, and he's a Philadelphia guy. He's a Philadelphia legend. They used to call him White Magic. Kind of a funny name. But he's a Philadelphia legend. So once he started recruiting me, I took one visit to Greensboro, North Carolina, and I committed immediately. And the rest from, I guess, is history from there.
Head Start Basketball, along with members of the J. Billis Skills Camp staff, will be hosting the very first Prime Skills Camp, an affiliate of the J. Billis Skills Camp that is held annually in Charlotte, North Carolina. Prime Skills Camp will take place on the campus of Western Reserve Academy, just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, June 26th through the 28th, and will be designed for boys rising to grades 6 through 9. Prime Skills Camp will mirror the J. Billis Skills Camp in daily programming, teaching, coach-to-camper ratio, and quality of instruction. Prime Skills Camp brings all of the team-oriented individual instruction, focus on the fundamentals, and high-level coaching to young men aspiring to a high school varsity basketball experience. This camp is operated by Billis Camp Veterans and includes the J. Billis Coaches Development Program alongside the camp, ensuring that the quality of teaching and coaching at this camp is second to none. Please visit headstartbasketball.com or jbilliscamp.com for more information or to get registered. Five Star, it's amazing. We've talked to a couple people actually recently, and we're going to have the guys who currently own the Five Star brand. Since, you know, it's obviously gone away just because of the way the basketball landscape has kind of shifted underneath and after Garf died and everything. Yeah, exactly. But you look at that again and you think about compare and contrast that to the system that we have today. You think about if you're a top 250 player in the country today, you're playing all over the country. You're playing most likely in air-conditioned gyms with all kinds of gear from Nike or Under Armour or whatever, and you're on this circuit. And then you go back and you think about going to play in Coryopolis, Pennsylvania at Robert Morris College on converted tennis courts in 110 the hill, walking back up and down, you know, going back to the dorm. And just, you know, you think about that now and you're like, man, that is crazy. That you think about, again, you named off some of the names, and we could make that list of names as long as we wanted to make it.
Yeah.
But those players went and did that year after year after year, and how successful Five Star was. It's an amazing story. And I think I hope the history of it doesn't get lost, and I'd love to see it make a comeback. And I think that's what they're planning to do. We're going to actually have those guys on in a couple weeks.
I think they should make like a 30 for 30 or some type
of absolutely. About like absolutely.
Five Star was ahead of its time. And the fact that, like you said, the conditions that like a lot of kids went to, like you said, we were going to Robert Morris or I think it was Homestead, Pennsylvania or something like that, staying in literally log cabins with no air conditioning. It was like 15 people to a cabin, and you know, all the top players that are like in, you know, in the NBA or top college players or top college coaches would go to this camp every year. And it was like you would have the top players there. And even still, like sometimes I see guys that I play with today that were at the camp, and we always look back at each other. It's like, man, I remember you from Five Star and like this, that, and the other. So it's crazy to think about, like, you know, some of us still have that bond.
Yeah, it's good stuff. I mean, Five Star was an amazing, amazing place. And just with the number of people that came through there that were great players that are still out there playing today. And it's going to be interesting to see where it goes and what happens with it. And it's just amazing, again, the people that came through there.
I agree.
So when you're at UNC Greensboro, talk a little bit about your college career, maybe share one or two of your favorite memories from playing college basketball.
So I'm going to go two memories. I'm going to go with I had a all perennial college career, not to necessarily, you know, talk about myself, but I guess that's what I'm on here to do.
That's what you're here for.
You know, I'm one of six players in college basketball history to have 2,000 points, 1,000 rebounds, 300 blocks. It's me, David Robinson, Derek Coleman, Purvis Ellison, Tim Duncan. For life of me, I can't remember who the other person is. And I was mid-major All-American, honorable mention. But we never made it to NCAA finals because I ran into a kid that looks like he's 13 years old and was at the time 5'11", 130 pounds, and his name is Stephen Curry. We were in the same conference as Davidson, and I remember, you know, playing against him and his team. I'm looking at him. I'm like, this is the guy they're saying is the player of the year. And you see him come out, and he has his, you know, T-shirt on all the way down to his elbows, and all of a sudden he comes out and drops 41 points. So the one memorable game I have is like when me and him, we kind of, you know, played against each other, we dueled against each other. I was a senior, and he was a sophomore at the time, right before they made their big conference tournament run, and that game was like sold out. It was like, you know, the biggest thing talked about on campus. So you know, that was kind of like a big moment for me. And then second, my school decided to retire my jersey while I was still playing. which was like
that's awesome.
Which is it was an incredible moment. I mean, for number one to be able to share that with my teammates and to share that with my friends and family and all about everybody that came out, to have that memory. Like I said, usually, you know, you go back maybe 5, 10, 15 years later and your university retires your jersey and it's like, you know, you're relevant, but you're still not relevant because in the student population, they don't necessarily know who you are. So for me to have that opportunity to be able to share that with my students, share that with the students and share that with my friends and my classmates and my coaching staff and my teammates, that was, you know, a great memory. I mean, I had some great times and at UNC Greensboro, you know, heart of ACC country, heart of basketball country. And I mean, it was an incredible experience.
Yeah, that's very cool. I think when you have that happen to you in the moment, I'm sure that looking back on that now, you probably appreciate it even more than you did moment. Not that it wasn't special in the moment, but I think when you're young and you get an award like that, or you have something happen to you in that way where you're recognized, you kind of, because you're in the moment, because you're right there, I don't necessarily know that you appreciate it. I'm sure that probably looking back on it now, you're like, wow, that was really special what they were able to do for me. And then, as you said, you got to share it with the people who you were right there in the moment with.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of times, that's everything in athletics. I find out it's like you don't necessarily grow appreciation for the moment and for the present until after it's over. Because in athletics, we're kind of brainwashed to worry about the next game or the next play or the next season. So it's like once one game is finished or once one moment is finished, then you automatically start gearing up for the next moment. It's like once one season is over, you're already in the off season. You start preparing for the next season. So sometimes you kind of lose. Like you said, you lose the moment, you lose the feeling of the moment, and then you look back years later, you're like, wow, like this is incredible. Like I wish that, you know, I would have let that kind of sink in and soak in a little bit more.
Yeah, so true. That's without a question. I think that's happened to me at several points where you're just experiencing something and you're like, oh, this is cool. And then later you look back, you're like, wow, I should have really taken some more time to appreciate what that was all about. So that being said, let's move to your professional career. Talk a little bit about how and when you started thinking, hey, I can play this game beyond college. Talk about whether or not your NBA dreams and then why you ended up going and deciding to play in Europe, because I know you had some opportunities to go to some NBA training camps. Just talk about what happened and how you ended up where you are now.
I started kind of getting a realization probably my sophomore year. Once some of my older teammates went overseas and started playing professionally, that I was like, I can possibly play professionally. And then probably right around my junior senior year when, you know, NBA scouts and agents and people started kind of contacting me, and, you know, friends of families, members and stuff like that started letting me know that, you know, that people are talking about you, people are, you know, talking about you, you know, possibly being a prospect. So once that realization fit in, I started kind of, you know, like really realizing like, you know, this is a high possibility. So I graduated college, ended up signing with an agent. I did the whole gauntlet with the Portsmouth Invitational Camp, the NBA pre-draft camp, which at the time then was in Orlando. I did some workouts with some teams. And I thought it was an outside shot, but I thought maybe I would have an opportunity. The NBA landscape was different then than it is now. Now there's positionless players. You know, you have guys like Draymond Green, you have guys like that where Giannis Antetokounmpo that don't necessarily have a position. You know, right now guys just kind of put out five players, they put out the best five players. A lot of guys are switching, stuff like that. Back when I was playing, which was 2008, kind of almost like the beginning of that new era, but still the league was a very cookie cutter league. It was like, you know, if you're a small forward, you got to be 6'8". If you're a shooting guard, you got to be 6'6". If you're a center, you got to be 6'10". And it kind of, unless you were an exception, like Charles Barkley or something like that, but for the most part, they kind of drafted guys based on those numbers or those measurables. And me, I played power forward and center at the time, and my draft height was 6'3¾". So I was like, I don't know if I'm going to get drafted based on that.
Right.
Just talking to my agent. But I ended up having I didn't get drafted. I ended up having a really good summer league, a really good workouts, post workouts through a number of different training camps. Funny, let me go back. So a funny story is, I worked out for the Charlotte Bobcats at the time, right? The Charlotte Bobcats had the number 38 pick in the draft, and I was from Greensboro. I played in Greensboro, so there's an obvious connection there. And they had the 38 pick, so I don't remember if it was David Stern or I can't remember who the commissioner was at the time. I don't think it was. It might have been David Stern. So David Stern gets up to the podium, and he says, with the 38th pick, the Charlotte Bobcats select Kyle. And the Kyle was the longest drawn-out Kyle I thought in my life. And I thought, like, I thought it was going to be me. But literally, my heart dropped. And it was like, with the 38th pick, the Charlotte Bobcats draft Kyle Weaver. And my heart just stopped. I was like, oh, man. But
that is rough.
Yeah. It was like a punch to the gut. But long story short, I went to Vegas, and I had a – for the NBA Summer League, I had a great workout with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Their general manager, assistant general manager at the time, sat down and talked to me. And he was like, listen, I think you would have a great opportunity if you go overseas. And he introduced me to this coach named Andrea Trinchieri. And we literally sat down, and I told the story a bunch of times. If you look at some of my other interviews, that me and him, he wined and dined me in a McDonald's. And over Big Macs and apple pies, he convinced me to, want to go overseas. And I met him. Me and him sat down and talked for an hour. And literally that next day, I signed a contract to go play in a small mountain town called Verrilli, Italy, with 5,000 people living in it. And I went to sign my first contract to play in second division Italy.
So you were a tweener, is what you're saying.
Basically.
And tweeners.
Yeah.
And tweeners then, like now, that's what everybody wants. Now everybody wants guys who can shift between multiple positions. Whereas, as you said, back in that time, you were kind of pigeonholed into that's what this guy is. And it's amazing just how the league has shifted and the way basketball has gone in different directions. Hey, Hoopheads Nation, check out this new offering from Tyler Whitcomb Basketball Coaching Courses. The Steve Wojciechowski Marquette Playbook by Brian Applin is now available. Wojciechowski is in his sixth season as the head men's basketball coach at Marquette University. Visit coachtube.com/users/Tyler Whitcomb to check out this great resource. Let's get your craziest European basketball story out of the way. Let's get that question answered, and then we'll dive a little bit deeper into your playing career.
So I'm gonna go with this story, which is kind of extreme. So I played in Greece. And I guess for people that don't know, there's a big rivalry in Greece, in Athens, Greece. It's Olympiakos and Panathinaikos. One of the biggest rivalries in basketball and sports in Europe and in probably the world. So there's these two teams that have internal hatred for each other. Whenever we play each other, it's the biggest thing. The town shuts down. I guess you could say that it's almost like if the Mets and the Yankees play, or it's hard to necessarily put in words, or it's like almost like if Duke and North Carolina play, it's almost a rivalry similar to that, because it's like everybody, it's in one town. So we play this game. We're playing the game for the Greek Cup. Now, to set the scene for you, we're playing in an arena, and in the arena on both end zones or both sidelines, the Olympiakos fans are on one side, the Panathinaikos are in one fans on the other side, and in between, there's a section of nothing but police officers just sitting in between, because this rivalry gets heated. You know, people are fighting, they literally meet up in the streets and they fight, they do whatever. So so literally we're warming up for the game, you know, layup lines, usual stretching, stuff like that. So the teams, the fans, are literally shooting flares back and forth at each other across the court, right? So I'm not paying it no mind. I'm just warming up, shooting, you know, doing my normal routine. And then all of a sudden, I get hit in the back of the head, and I fall down. And I look down, and my pants are on fire. So I hurry up, and I brush my pants off. And I notice I got hit in the back of the head with a flare. So I get up, and I just run to the locker room. So mind you, I run to the locker room, and everybody's like, they see it. People see it. And they're like, oh, you know, what happened? You're like, okay. And I was like, yeah, I got hit with a flare. So the doctor checks me, and then I sit down. The coach comes in, he looks at me, he's like, is he okay? And he's like, yeah. And he goes about his pregame speech like it's nothing happened, and we play the game like that's nothing awesome. Happened. And I'm like, and thinking I tell this story to people, they're like, hold up, you got shot with a flare and they continue to play the game? And I was like, yeah. They were just like, when I asked people, they were like, hey, that's just what happens. That's Greece. So that's just, and then later on during the game, they end up a couple of fans rush the court, and both the sides of the fans are started fighting on the middle of the court. So they had to clear the game, clear the arena, and we end up playing the game with no fans in that game. So that was probably like one of like the craziest moments I probably had in Europe. It was unreal. It's like I got shot with a shot with a flare in the basketball game. Who would ever think?
I love those stories because everybody to a man who has played overseas has a story similar to that. Like it's just crazy what goes on. I don't think here in the United States, if you're not familiar with European basketball, you just don't know some of that stuff that goes on with the fans, and then kind of there's always the behind the scenes depending on what league you're in and getting paid and making sure that making sure that your money ends up hitting your bank accounts. There's all kinds of those stories and it's always interesting. So along those lines, what's been your favorite city that you've played in while you've been overseas?
So I've been very fortunate. I've been played in some great teams, some great cities. I played 2 years, like I said, in second division in Verrelli, Italy. Like I said, it was a town of 5,000 people, but it was very like an authentic Italian village. Like literally, like people like literally still wash their clothes by hand. Like people to get water, they would go to the center of town and go to a watering hole. There was, you know, wild goats and wild horses running around. Nobody spoke English. So I think that was definitely a true experience because it forced me to kind of, you know, come out of my comfort zone and learn Italian and learn a second language. And then from there, which the city was actually 30 minutes from Rome. So I was able to go to Rome and see the Colosseum and go to, you know, see the Vatican. Like I would literally, you know, drive past the Colosseum. Like, you know, normally people drive past your local, you know, restaurant or local McDonald's or something like that. Like I was that fortunate enough to drive by the Colosseum multiple times a day. So I think Italy was definitely a high point. I played in Bamberg, Germany, for 1 year, which was Bamberg is considered one of the best basketball towns in the whole entire Europe because the fans are literally like freaks of basketball. They call them Freak City because how fanatic they are. So I played there. And then I played 2 years for Olympiakos in Greece, where we won the European Championship twice. And living in Athens is amazing. I literally lived in an apartment, which was 15 feet from the beach. So I used to wake up every morning and be able to walk to the beach and, you know, walk in the water. And then the past 7 years, I've been in Moscow, Russia. And Moscow has now been the place I've called home. I play for CSKA Moscow right now, which is one of the, you know, the powerhouse clubs of Europe, of European basketball. And I've been fortunate enough to be here and live in Moscow and experience Moscow, you know, for the past 7 years. And I think, to me, Moscow has definitely been the best place because, number one, I spend my most time here. And number two, because growing up, Russia has always been a natural adversary of the United States. So it's like, you know, whether or not it's Rocky and Bullwinkle cartoons when you're younger or the Rocky movies or anything like that, you always kind of had a stereotype of you know, people or Russia. So coming here, living here, it completely was like a 180 for me. Moscow is completely different than what I would expected. It's a beautiful country, it's a beautiful city, and you know, so many people have made me and my family feel at home. So I think definitely so far Moscow has definitely been my favorite.
All right, so when you first get over there, what's the biggest cultural adjustment for you when you get there? And then the second piece of that question is, did it get easier each time you move to a new place to sort of become integrated into where you were living?
I think number one, the hardest thing was I was from basically a suburb of like Philadelphia. So I lived like in, you know, I was all used to a big city. And then also, I went to school in Greensboro, North Carolina, which is considered, you know, a big city too. So when I went to Italy, you know, it was a complete culture shock to me. The language, just the generally just how, you know, people, the culture, Everything. It was just a complete culture shock. How everything was just slowed down, and it was literally me living like in a village. And then just the downtime, you know, I was doing everything by myself. I didn't have anybody with me initially. So just having that downtime was the toughest part. But I think for me, the thing that was fortunate for me was that, number one, I had a coach that he had a dual passport. He had an Italian passport and an American passport. So he understood helping me in that transition. And then number two, I had veteran guys on my team, older guys on my team that helped me kind of get through that experience. I was over in Italy and I was 21 years old and I didn't necessarily, you know, understand my first time. So I kind of used that experience every time that I've gone to a new team or a new city and kind of always lean back on that experience and lean back on the lessons I learned through those times. And I think that's what kind of has made it been easier for me. That's why I think I've been able to have such a successful career overseas.
Yeah, it's cool that you've been able to go to a bunch of different places, a bunch of different teams. And then now, as you said, you've been established in Moscow. So I'm sure from your perspective, being settled in and feeling like you're a part of that community and that city and mm-hmm. that, again, it feels, I'm sure, like home at this point that you've been there long.
It's home.
And that's very cool. All right. I know that you have some things going on off the court as well that you're interested in. You got your own podcast. You got some other projects that you're working on. So maybe spend a couple minutes just talking about some of the things you have going on off the court.
Yeah. So I have my own podcast with the EuroLeague. It's called The Kyle Zone. Right now I have about 5 episodes where I interviewed Andre Kirilenko.
Nice.
I interviewed Trajan Langdon, the Duke, you know, All-American, former NBA player. They were both big stars here. I interviewed Sergio Rodriguez, who was a former NBA player, but also a big-time star in EuroLeague. I interviewed Othello Hunter, who played at Ohio State. And I have one more interview coming up with a special guest that will be coming soon.
Cool.
But basically with the idea behind the podcast and was that I wanted to give guys an opportunity to share their experiences from overseas. Like you said before, everybody you talk to that has played overseas has a story. And a lot of times guys don't necessarily get opportunity to share those stories, to share those experiences. So that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to start a podcast for, you know, to give those guys and give people an opportunity to kind of see the life people live overseas. Because a lot of times it's like, you know, you'll see your favorite college player that doesn't make it to the NBA. And you'd be like, well, whatever happened to such and such? Or where is he playing at? And literally, you know that, you know, this player is having, you know, a great career playing overseas. And, you know, he's, you know, winning championships and accomplishing all these great things, but he just doesn't have the medium to show it. So I created the podcast, and along with my friends, we created a production company where we do docuseries showcasing just that. So far we did four docuseries. We did one on myself, me showcasing my life in Russia, called Just a Kid from Sickleville. And then we did two more called EuroLeague Rooks, where we followed players their first time in EuroLeague, their first year in EuroLeague, and just talked about their experiences. And then we did one more called The Off Season, where we follow guys, overseas guys, coming back home during the summertime and their experience, you know, them coming back home after being away for 10 months during the year, and them kind of, you know, getting adjusted back to, you know, playing back at home or being back at home and spending time with their family. So, like I said, the whole main goal of that is just to kind of show, show the experience and the stories of guys playing overseas.
That's great stuff. Why don't we share where people can find that, share your contact information so people can reach out to you, whether it's on email or social media, share all that stuff so people can find out about what you're doing, because I know you have a lot of great things going on that people are going to be interested in. So share that out, and then we'll jump back on and wrap things up.
Thank you. My name is Kyle Hines, KYLEHINES. My Twitter is at Sir Hines. My Instagram is at Sir Hines 42. And you can find my podcast on Apple Podcasts. It is called The Kyle Zone. And then also our production company is on YouTube. It's called GTM Family Production, and on there you can see that's where we house all our docuseries and all our documentaries there. And my email is kylehines42@gmail.com for anybody that, you know, wants to contact me directly and has ask questions about overseas basketball life, or just questions in general about, you know, what life is like for a foreigner or American player playing overseas.
Kyle, can't thank you enough for spending 40 minutes or so with us this morning. We're going to put all that stuff into the show notes so that people don't have to be furiously scribbling it as they're listening in their car.
Yeah.
And hopefully people will reach out to you. I think it's been a really valuable, a very valuable episode here for people to be able to listen to.
Thank you, we can't thank you enough
for being a part of it. And to everyone out there, we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Registration is now open at headstartbasketball.com for this summer's Head Start Basketball Camps. We'll be hosting camps for boys and girls in grades 1 through 6 throughout the greater Cleveland area. Get registered today and make sure you hit the courts with us this summer.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast presented by Head Start Basketball.